Hi, this is Bob Fetrakis in the studio with my cohort, Dan Dugan. This is The Other Side of the News, and we're going to be talking about a decade of resistance.
Death and hatred to mankind, poisoning their brainwashed minds. Oh, Lord, yeah.
Hey, Bob. Yeah, we're going to be talking about 10 years of rebellion and resistance from the Columbus Free Press, as you shared the letter, the masthead, and it's available all around town. We suggest you pick it up. So this decade, as we know, began, at least from the article's standpoint, concerning the struggle for peace in the world, correct?
Well, yeah, the tens or the teens, many things happened in that period. But again, one, in 2011, you had the departure of Senator George Voinovich, who was lauded by the Columbus Dispatch as one of the great public servants. He spent most of his time enriching his family and allowing corporations to get large subsidies and welfare checks.
Of course he did. Didn't his brother have something to do with prisons, private prisons?
Well, the whole family did. The Voinovich family was involved in the building of prisons and particularly jail cells. And they thought they'd fooled the people of Ohio by going by the name the V Group. They're pretty much tricksters there, Daniel.
Dun, 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 dun. Yeah, indeed. I got gotcha. You.
The V Group.
Sure they are, the V Group.
What's
right.
That V stand for? Not victory.
Voinovich. Voinovich, of course. So, yeah, so the Voinovich years passed, and then came Governor John Kasich.
John Kasich.
Mm-hmm.
Who got off to a very bad start. Again, turning down the $400 million for the 3C rail line, Cincinnati to Columbus to Cleveland, is you would have been able to take a train, but John Kasich gave the money back. Then he went after the working class and was fought back, and then he decided he would go heavily into fracking, despite the environmentalists telling him, John, no fracking way. But the good news, it did come out later on in the form of Roger Stone, Trump's guy, Trump's fixer, that Kasich was the man in the 1976 Reagan campaign.
He was the bag man.
When you needed the three-fingered lid.
Dude.
The nickel bag.
Right.
John Kasich was the
Johnny
go-to
was
guy.
On the spot. Absolutely. Well, that's good to know. Yes. And by the way, Mr. Stone will be Roger Stone will be talked about later in the year when they get around to sentencing him. But in the meantime, you know, Kasich has always been able to say he's a never Trumper. You know, you have to keep that in mind.
So. Indeed, he was the last man standing in the Republican primary,
and he sits and sits on the sidelines and waits to
we
see.
We gave him that little right? salute there. They did, you know, the salute because he wasn't another Trumper, right? He understood that, you know, Trump was a bully and Trump didn't care about facts. And Kasich likes facts. He helped balance the budget there with Bill Clinton. So he didn't go to the Republican convention, even though it was in his state, Cleveland, Ohio.
He was that much of a
And he's also called for the impeachment of Trump.
Yes, and if by chance, which of course we doubt that will come to pass, it would be, I think we might be happy about it if Trump was removed from office. If it did, then Kasich will be sitting there ready to assume the reins of the new Republican Party.
Yeah,
but that's doubtful.
I don't care if they remove him as long as they flog him. If
flog
ever
him,
a man needed a horse whipping,
you heard it here
be Donald
first.
Trump.
Folks in the studios of WGRN, which I think used to be a carriage house,
right,
for horses.
Maybe that's why I've got the horse whip on my mind.
Yes, indeed. So, then the Free Press continued to reveal, for one, that the Occupy movement had come on the scene. And I was proud to be part of that and even organized a benefit for it. And I'm still kind of wondering where the money from that went. But, you know, Bob, we'll have to look into that.
No, don't really know.
I hope it was a good party. I'm sure I was probably there. Anyway, so.
But one of the things is you had mixed reviews of the band, Uncle John's State House Band.
Yeah, they were really fun. I liked those guys. I was playing with Nephew, although he wasn't really my nephew. Well, Ukulele Man was around. But nonetheless, the Occupy people were out there longer than anybody else in this country. Down by the State House, camping out in cold weather. I used to often bring them extra food, leftover food from the coffee shop I was working at, the Cup of Joe Mojo over there, some donuts and things of that sort. But the group was always out there and even managed to get arrested at one point in a bank, correct?
Yeah, there was six of them, as I recalled, and they went to the bank and the police were waiting there for them. It's almost like the police had snitches in the movement. The bank didn't, I talked to the bank manager. The bank manager said, we didn't call the cops on them. We would have explained our neighborhood banking policy. But right. There the police were ready.
They were ready to arrest. Dance. That's right.
The people who were going to inquire, perhaps aggressively, about
right.
neighborhood banking policies.
Exactly. John, that's Bob's friends, the Jump Boys, right?
The Jump Out Boys.
The Jump Out Boys.
This time they were jumping out of the lobby display. Get a free credit card.
From behind the potted plant.
Oh, my God. There's a white Jump Out Boy.
The Christmas Club sign over there. Look out. Here they come. So, yes, much rebellion and resistance was carried on through the Occupy movement, both here and around the country. But, again, Columbus was here the longest, and the Free Press was Johnny on the spot as far as that goes to report that. And then the man known as Barack Obama, the first African-American president of the United States, came into power and promptly won a Nobel Peace Prize.
And again, he won the Nobel Peace Prize for the speech he gave when he was a state senator denouncing the Iraq War. So there were great expectations that Barack Hussein Obama would usher in a new era of peace, love, understanding, and obeying international law. But, of course, he ran afoul in the last decade. That is, he ended up with regime change in Libya.
Your buddy down there, Gaddafi, right?
Yeah, he overthrew the government of Gaddafi. Brought in the jihadist terrorists, one of the bizarrest things in modern history. The U.S. comes to the rescue of the jihadist terrorists against an authoritarian Ba'ath Party dictator who was keeping them in check. But we now know from WikiLeaks, which added greatly to the decade in terms of our knowledge.
Sure, absolutely.
We know from WikiLeaks that a lot of that came from Sarkozy. The French head of state who wanted to reassert his control in Libya over the oil and keep the dictator Gaddafi from creating a pan-African currency known as the gold dinar.
Wow. Okay. All of that happened.
And again, I would argue that what the U.S. did there, and particularly what Barack Obama did, is a war crime. You can't do regime change legally under international law. If you don't like a country, you can't invade it, kill the leader. And then the worst part about it was, of course, the giggling, hysterical Hillary Clinton, who said, "We came, we saw, he died."
And right now what you're seeing or listening to is on WGRN. 94.1, the Green Renaissance, and this is the other side of the news. So the regime change was not only in Libya, but changes that came out through Obama eventually, right? There was regime change in Venezuela, and Bolivia. That, of course, happened under Trump, but it began under Obama, right?
Well, yeah, we were squeezing Venezuela under Obama, but we'll give that one to Trump. But it was still part of that decade.
It was a shared, shared suppression. Right, okay.
But we can give the Honduras coup, the illegal coup, when the U.S. overthrew the government of Honduras in 2009. Well, it's a year early. But anyway, that was an Obama project. Yes.
Right, sure. Okay, so the struggle for world peace continued, and the Free Press, of course, reported on it. And also, we found ourselves mired in racism still after all these years in the murder of many people, young black people on the streets, starting with Trayvon Martin.
Well, just yesterday, George Zimmerman is going to sue Trayvon Martin's family for $100 million. White supremacist hero, who the weirdest thing out of all of it is all these people, these white gun nuts are always, he stood his ground. No, he didn't. He stalked and killed. His ground was his butt in the car. That's the ground he should have stood, right? He didn't do that. He got out of the car, stalked Trayvon, and killed him. Nothing to do with stand your ground. He was in a car. He got out. He shot him.
Yeah, indeed.
And granted, he was stunned that a black man would have the code to a gated community, which made no sense to George Zimmerman. And again, it was all legit. His uncle lived there.
And that list continued to add up with Crawford, Rice, Green, King, etc.
And those are the well-known local black men that were shot dead by the police.
Right. Well, and the Black Lives Movement emerged, correct?
Yeah, Black Lives Matter ended up, in 2011, 2012, 2013, you had this huge explosion. In 2013, really the year it starts, because that's when Trayvon Martin was murdered by George Zimmerman.
Right.
But prior to that, there were killings ongoing in Columbus, Ohio.
Mm-hmm. But, I guess, again, as part of the resistance, the Black Lives Matter movement has really made some difference, yes, at least in keeping the issue. I mean, it continues to happen, seemingly a little less right now, but maybe it's just a matter of time. So, at any rate, and the decade continued, right?
Well, yeah, and part of the question is how should police the communities that they're giving authority under to protect and serve? And we're having that debate right now in Columbus. Do you bring in an outside police chief who's more progressive, or do you go with the traditional insider?
And what direction do you think the mayor will go, right?
Isn't well, we it, cover that. Mayor, we cover that in the Free Press.
Correct. Yes.
And virtually every human rights activist and Black Lives Matter activist say, really, you need to bring in an outsider with a fresh perspective. Is that you've got to fundamentally alter the culture of the Columbus Police.
Mm-hmm. Well, but who do you think the mayor will choose? Do you have any information?
I think he's going to choose the insider. I think that makes the FOP, Fraternal Order of Police, happy, the police union.
And that would be the white guy, right? Wasn't it?
Yes, okay. A white guy versus a black police chief.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, okay. At any rate, we're also continuing to fight for voter rights, correct?
Half
century after the Voter Rights Act, we're still trying to count the votes. So, and I know you've been often involved in those campaigns. So.
Right, and mass purges continued in the last decade.
Right.
They really began in 2004 in Ohio, 305,000 people purged. In the 2004 election year, primarily in the inner cities of Toledo, Cleveland, where they purged nearly a quarter of all the voters in Cleveland, a city that voted 83% for John Kerry, Cincinnati as well. So that's been ongoing.
Got to get rid of those Democratic voters, right?
They targeted poor minorities, particularly blacks, right? And this is being done by Republicans. It's being done in a purposeful way. It reflects, I've heard them make arguments they're not racist. They're just going after, poor people, right?
Right.
Whether they're black or white.
Right. People who don't have a good paper trail.
Right. So they're going after the most vulnerable in the society.
So, but isn't the state of Ohio, isn't someone in the legislature introducing a bill, a motor voter bill? But you don't think that'll pass, do you?
Well, nothing that helps people vote in Ohio is going to pass, particularly in election year. The Republicans, this is a long historical process. If you look at page 9 in the Free Press, not only do you get this weird Lewis Powell memo in 1971 outlining how the wealthy corporations and wealthy people using nonprofits and foundation can take over policy in the country, which they did with the American Legislative Exchange Council. But on June 17, 1971, Nixon declares drugs public enemy number one. And we go off on a spree worthy of Joe Stalin, creating a racist gulag system of incarceration. And of course, in 1994, John Ehrlichman, Nixon's domestic policy advisor, tells Atlantic Magazine, quote, "By getting the public to associate the hippies with marijuana and blacks with heroin, and then criminalizing both heavily, we could disrupt those communities." He says that we knew they weren't a threat. We knew this wasn't public enemy number one. It was political payback from the anti-war movement of the 60s and from the Black Power civil rights movement.
Absolutely. And then a lot of people believe that the government themselves helped in the cocaine flooding the streets, particularly crack. And of course, we know that the penalties for crack as opposed to the snorting type of cocaine is much higher as a result of that.
Well, that's because it was really friends of the CIA. And CIA, of course, we knew stood for Cocaine Importing Agency. We knew that the friends of the CIA, the Contras, were heavily involved in financing their black ops rebellion against the Sandinistas. So we knew that was happening, and we knew the CIA knew about it and was helping them ship the stuff into this country.
Sure, sure. And we have discussed that before. I had some firsthand experience in some of those substances, particularly hashish, that discussed the freedom of a country called Afghanistan, and we're still at war there. But also, back to the voting issue, Bob, we also had in 2013 the elimination of the minor parties like the Green Party, which you were actively involved, the Socialists, the Constitutional Law, and the Libertarians are all pretty much knocked to the side.
Well, in the fall of 2013, the Republican state legislators blatantly violated the Constitution of Ohio and threw the four minor parties off the ballot.
Mm-hmm.
They knew what they were doing was unconstitutional. They didn't care. They're power mad. They've gerrymandered. They're in charge. They'll do whatever the hell they want, including violating the Constitution.
Yeah, indeed. All right. We also want to remind everybody that you're listening to The Other Side of the News with Dr. Bob Fitrakis and Dan Dugan. Streaming to you from the Indie Media Studios of the Free Press Network here on YouTube, but also available online at WGRN.org. Plus, listen to us on Columbus, Ohio's two volunteer-run low-power FM radio stations, Fridays at 5:30 p.m. on WGRN 94.1 The Green Renaissance, and Mondays 5:30 p.m. on WCRS 92.7 and 98.3. And you know what else, Bob? There's a need to save the planet. to go from the micro to the macro. And so the environmental efforts to save the planet continue. Anti-fracking going on here in Ohio. And there are still continual disasters around the planet involving like the Deepwater Horizon and the Fukushima tsunami to bring energy to our society, and it's pretty scary. So, and the free press continues to discuss it. Correct?
Yeah, I mean the planet is in peril. You've got young people fighting back, trying to get these greenhouse gases down. You've got deniers, just like Holocaust deniers. You've got deniers of climate change, even though it's apparent all around us. The data is there. Scientists from the Pentagon to the corporations to the universities all agree on
this. Just last week there was
and we've got the denier in chief, right?
Yep.
Donald Trump, who simply says, well, it's not happening. And of course, the least educated, the ones most likely to foam from their mouth, the ones that read the least, think he's a pretty good thinker and agree with the denier in chief.
Yeah, well, there you go. And of course, all of those who back him, including the Murray from the coal company. And it just goes on, and we're not making much progress. But there was some action in recent years, thanks to the Native Americans at Standing Rock, where a friend Rudy goes to help support and fight against the pipeline, et cetera, right?
Yeah, you've got water protectors. You've got the Native Americans taking on the dirty tar sand, oil, and gas from Canada.
Right.
And you've got people here, Madeline Fitch.
I was going to say, the local efforts.
Who in the last decade chained herself to an injection well. And you also had 10 activists engaging in civil disobedience down in Marietta, trying to keep the toxic and radioactive frack water, which they won't allow to be buried in West Virginia and Pennsylvania, from coming into Ohio, right? Kasich and the Republicans see that as a growth industry. You know, look, Ohio's underpolluted. Bring that radium-226, 228. Bring those 900 toxic chemicals. We've got plenty of space in Appalachia to dump that stuff.
And here, right here in Franklin County, the effort to put on the ballot to save our groundwater, and that continues to be a struggle, to attempt just to get people to vote for that right to frackers out.
And people usually vote for clean air and clean water. It's just that the state won't let them enact it. The state is doing away with home rule. But another disturbing factor that came out in the period of 2012-2013 was that in 2014, the FBI in Philadelphia with the Joint Terrorism Task Force and the Pennsylvania State Police began to label anti-fracking activists as terrorists.
Oh, yeah.
And even put out a little pamphlet identifying the environmental terrorists
themselves. I'm sorry, I can't even say that with a straight face because it's so ridiculous. So yes, so by working to try to save the earth, you're a terrorist, right?
And then who they're not looking at, you know, with their resources, they're not looking at the longest standing terrorist group, right? The Ku Klux Klan. So the Ku Klux Klan get to be
or
on
the coal
the,
industry. Yeah, big one.
Yeah, those people, you know, are allowed to poison their neighbors, right? And get away with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that struggle can, you know, obviously is going to continue. And there are some bright spots here and there. So we have many legalizations of gay marriage. We find marijuana popping up here and there in a legal sense, right here in Ohio for...
A year ago, part of the decade, right, the federal government legalized hemp, realized it was a tremendous wonder product. And again, I'm a man who loves hemp soap. A little peppermint hemp soap there, Mr.
A little bit I've caught you occasionally. Hemp soap.
Not when I go use a long the way. With the other soaps, but I've caught you occasionally sniffing me when I've used the peppermint.
Oh, that's what it was. Yes. Oh, you smell so wonderful. What's that you have on?
Hemp soap, lad.
He's got a hemp on. I tell you.
I've got a little cake of hemp beard. And I put that right on.
But we can
lather it up.
We can also look to the rebirth and acceptance of democratic socialism. Now, here you all tend to thank Bernie, but I think there's quite a few more people than just Bernie, but good old Bernie is there.
Who would you be thanking?
Who would I be thanking? Yourself, one, and many other people who are activists in this country, in this nation, who are trying to bring some common sense and realizing that socialism is shared principles to help the public get a little further down the road, like your libraries and your firemen and your police, even the army. But, start saying that, they'll call you a commie.
Labor creates all wealth. It ought to be shared. It's usually created socially through social interaction.
There you go.
Why give 28 people the same amount of money as half the people on the planet? Makes no sense. It makes them hoarders. It buries them alive. It makes them sick.
Mm-hmm.
And they're, we ought to see these people for the hoarders that they are. It's like, hi,
hoarders,
I've got $50 billion. I'll never be able to spend it, but I'm hoarding it for more while people starve.
Mm-hmm. Well, as we're coming to the end of this show, as we discuss the decade of resistance from the New Free Press, we also want to suggest that you look at the calendar and get out there and go to some of these events. Enjoy your holidays. And I guess we're supposed to count on the ultimate salvation from the millennial generation, because they seem to understand that mean people suck.
They do, and they don't like mean people. And if the millennials were the only voting bloc, there'd be just a few little tiny islands of red.
And I'd like to say, don't suck mean people.
Yeah. Good point.
Thank you very much. It's The Other Side of the News with Dr. Bob Fitrakis and Dan Duke.
Death and hatred to mankind, poisoning their brainwashed minds. Oh!